previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Gentlemen, to crime.
Crime.
Crime tastes funny.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 135 for the week of November 14th, 2016. I am Loose Cannon, spelt with two N's or one, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Minute 23 Red Herring, Sarah D. Bunting.
Lawyer.
Puking rookie Tara Ariano. And supermodel detective Eve Beatty.
I'm such an amazing detective, but my personal life is a mess.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Extra Hot Great. Dave, before we begin, do we have any site business?
Only that we're back with the minis starting this week. So,
yeah.
This episode will probably drop Tuesday evening, and then Wednesday morning, there'll be a fresh mini waiting for you.
Nice. So.
Yes, indeed. Minis are back, and they will be killer.
Meh.
Hey? You done, Dave? Can I go?
Yes.
All right. Speaking of killers, welcome to Crime TV Week on Extra Hot Great. We are joined once again by our esteemed colleague, Eve Beatty. Hello, Eve.
Hey, guys.
Yay!
We are going to be talking about every possible iteration of crime TV. Serious crime TV, comedies, true crime that's good, true crime that's trashy, a la Wives with Knives. Actually, all the other genres on TV might have been a smaller topic basis for us to cover, but we're going to get through this.
And then a 35-minute discussion of Charlie Chan and the Chan Gang, the crime TV Saturday morning cartoon from the 70s. Not at all racist. Go.
I had budgeted 50 minutes for that.
Oh, okay.
But you want to go 35? That's fine. We're going to start off the discussion by talking a little bit about A&E's new series, new like prestige event true crime series, The Killing Season, which is about the Gilgo Beach murders and the sex workers that have been turning up dead on Long Island, and still this case is not solved. The series comes from Alex Gibney, who produced Going Clear, among others, and the co-directors Joshua Zeman and Rachel Mills, who very nicely sat for an interview with us last week and directed Killer Legends, which is not just some dumb, like, I scrolled past this on Netflix a million times. It's actually a feature about how urban legends may stem from real crimes in the communities. It's excellent. You should check it out. I don't know how much of Killing Season you guys have watched, but I'd be really interested to hear what you think of it and how you think it compares to things like OJ Made in America, The Jinx, etc.
Dave and I watched the first, we just watched the first two that aired on Saturday.
So far, yeah, they haven't too. Solved it.
No, they have not.
Well, who here has read the book Lost Girls by Robert Kolker, which I feel like sort of got people started on this whole story.
I've never heard of this before, this case.
Yeah, I'd heard of the case, but I think I just read like an article in New York Magazine a while ago, and that was the only information I had about it other than that it existed.
I have read the book, and I agree with Josh Zeman that it is one of the best true crime books of the decade.
Eve? Absolutely. No, I mean, I absolutely do. And I think that, you know, the only quote unquote problem with the story is it's really unsatisfying because, spoiler, we don't know who did this stuff. And this show is not, it's one of those things like when you're watching those ghost hunter shows, you sort of think, well, you know, if there actually was a ghost, we would have heard about it by now. the same like with this, like, you know, if they actually had for real solved the crime, we would know about it by now.
Right.
And so that's, you know, it's a little difficult for me, you know, coming into the show, knowing that all this is going to be is sort of talking about stuff. Maybe they're going to dig up some new leads. Maybe it will have some sort of, you know, unintended consequences or, you know, get people going on it again, as we've seen with, you know, with maybe like, you know, with Making a Murderer or even, you know, the first season of Serial. But there's part of me that's just sort of like, oh, God, what's the point?
Yeah. The Jinx only comes along once in a lifetime, I think.
yeah.
Well, and I think that's putting a lot of pressure on the filmmakers. They were speaking to me about that, that it's like, well, now we all live in a post-Jinx world where sometimes with these series, you are expected to like get a result, which I think is not, you know, it's not realistic. And also I think it's not why people necessarily watch this kind of content. On the other hand, you have something like Paradise Lost, which sort of got a result, but not really.
Yeah.
And then there were, you know, there's another chapter and then the result is maybe different. And now, you know, these men are out of jail, but it took really a long time. It took really a long time and a lot of people pushing really hard and trying to get an Alfred plea. So, you know, it is interesting for me as a longtime fan of the genre to look at how it's evolving and what the pressure must be on directors and producers to bring a case into the pitch meeting that like maybe they could solve it on camera.
Yeah.
And whether that's affecting the genre.
Well, I did find it. I mean, it was only funny because it ended well, but when they've contracted with the prostitute, I can't remember her name, to be her driver.
Super.
God, how could I forget that? They've driven her to an appointment, let's say, and she was supposed to have been out a while ago and they're waiting out front and they can't raise her on the phone. And like, as horrible as it must have been in the moment until she, you know, comes out and she's fine, her phone just died. But like that part of them must have been like, well, this is a thing that we're actually getting on camera that might turn out to be something. I mean,
yeah.
Well, and this is part of what I like about this filmmaking team is that like they do, there isn't this like objective documentarian stance, like they're in it, which I think the network asked them to make maybe a little more of that Scully and Mulder thing than they wanted to.
Yeah, I could see that.
Based on their, you know, based on their comments. But they, like, you definitely feel, I relate to them a lot, that they're just like, well, do we go in there? But then it's like, well, once you get in there, what do?
Right.
And you knock on every door and like, what is our role? Like, what is our role here? Are we security? And you also saw that in Killer Legends, like they were exploring some like crazy lover's lane where apparently the escaped murderer with the hook story might have gotten started. Mm-hmm. And it's in Texas in the summer and some arachnid lands on Mills's hair and it's a Texas sized nighttime bug. And she's just like, oh my God, this is the fucking worst movie ever. I quit life. This is terrible. So I really like that about them. And I'm hoping that, I think the season is going in this direction of like, it's going to be a larger comment on why certain crimes don't get solved, which I think is both important and sometimes difficult to do compellingly without it being a lecture. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that that relatability with them like carries them through that part of the story.
Yeah, I was interested to keep watching. I mean, I, not knowing anything about it, all everything that they unveiled, I mean, it was probably old hat to both of you guys, but it was interesting to me. So yeah, I thought it was
so many murders.
Well, the facet of the online, you know, crime solving communities is something that I really only know about, you know, from reading about it, you know, with, like, oh my God, and now I'm so embarrassed I can't remember her name, with Patton Oswalt's wife. Please, someone tell me her name so I don't seem like
Alice.
Somebody does.
Michelle?
Mrs. Oswalt.
Well, so she, oh God. So she wrote that great article for Los Angeles Magazine a few years ago about her membership in these, in, you know, in this sort of crime-solving community.
Oh,
and,
yeah, I remember that. You know, that's right.
And I mean, you'll remember that, you know, like in the that sort of that recent interview that Oswald did, he talked about how his wife felt like she was getting closer and she was putting all this time into it. And it was just a reminder to me how engaged these people get, like, you know, because I think especially for, you know, the four of us who have worked online as long as we have, sometimes we're like, well, you know, we appreciate commenters and we appreciate their commentary on the content that we create.
We do.
Well, no, but I'm not even completely playing right now, but you know, we appreciate they exist and we appreciate that they are commenting on our work, and we forget that a lot of times there's this whole other world of people talking to each other that doesn't involve anybody who's getting paid. And they're doing stuff that we don't even, I'm a little more aware of it this week, but, you know, they're doing all of this stuff. And it's interesting to me and it's exciting to me that this show is talking more about that, especially when they brought in that German guy who is basically made for TV.
Oh my God.
He's great.
Author of maritime novels, Peter Brent. Like, what even is that? Yeah. In Germany. Love you, Germany.
German national. And, you know, and he's like there, you know, oh, well, you know, I'm just a, what's your hobby? Oh, I'm a profiler. Oh my God. Really?
Look, some people color in coloring books and some people profile criminals. It's gripping. That part of it, I'm glad you brought it up, was interesting to me too, because that whole, the web sleuths aspect of it was unknown to me as well, but at least it
and they're
seems
they're
like
completely leaning into that, which I think is actually really smart, because then you can sort of leverage it. Like, I think it's easy to come at this from a more like hidebound 20th century, you know, we're going to look at these crimes, we're going to document our process of reinvestigating them, mm-hmm. and we're going to maybe dismiss Reddit and the various Reddit herrings that it throws up as just like the product of fevered minds or whatever. But it's like, okay, well, yeah. As with everything else in life, literally from food to holidays or whatever, 80% of that is going to be garbage.
Right.
But 20% isn't. And I think that it's very nice of them to filter those percentages for us so that we're getting the cream of the crop based on their research.
Well, my understanding, you know, which is basically like, once again, based on that Los Angeles Magazine article and just a very small amount of research I did after watching the first episode of the show, it looks like those specific crime solving forums are very closely moderated. Like, by people, you know, that, and it reminds me a lot of, and I'm not even saying this as a plug, but it reminds me, you know, very much like the forums that you guys oversaw sort of in your early days of working online, where they, you know, you're getting bounced for say, beginning with you know, that right. sort of level of stuff. And I think that if these people really are committed to, you know, finding the answers to stuff and not just sort of half-assed Reddit level things, please don't hurt me, Reddit people, then, you know, that's sort of the way that you have to do it. And so I think that's great. I do think that the people who are really engaged in these things, who have this sort of this long-term relationship with all this, I do think that there's probably a higher percentage of success rates. What did they say? How many people have been identified?
It was a few hundred.
Right. And I was just like, holy shit, really? Like, they're that good? And that's why I started looking stuff up. I mean, and these people really do have hits when it comes to identifying dead bodies.
Right. They're not crazies who are just like throwing out dumb theories after the Boston bombing or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I was rolling my eyes at Reddit, as I was thinking about, you know, oh, well, you know, they're in a hoodie.
Right.
But yeah. But I do think that when we're talking about like sort of, you know, the public records can only take you so far, and that's where you really do have to talk to witnesses and stuff. And so maybe we need to start some Kickstarters for these people on these forums to get them out there with the filmmakers.
Michelle McNamara, by the way, is Patton Oswalt's late wife.
Thank you. Thank you so
much. Yes, Alice is their daughter. Sorry, I misspoke about who that was.
All right, well, shall we move on to the lighter side of the crimes, our crime stories this
week?
Let's
shift our fold, as Boy would say.
I bet Brooklyn Nine-Nine doesn't use the phrase torso killer.
I don't know, they might, as a punchline.
Torso killer.
Yeah, I thought we could just talk briefly about Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because it was off for a couple of weeks, and then it came back, and then the episode that it came back with is a very off-model episode, hardly any crime solving at all, mostly just all about the wedding of Rosa and, oh my God, I already forget his name, Adrian Pimento, who comes back, and he terrifies Boyle's new young son by hiding in his closet. I enjoyed this episode very much. I'll keep it sort of light on plot details, just because this might come out before it airs tonight. Yes, Dave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But lots of good Holtiness in this episode. The decorations for the wedding was probably my favorite part.
I gotta say, with the Holt thing, they've totally Ron Swanson Holt.
No, don't say that.
No.
Oh, I don't think that's
they true. Just use him as the you know, like, remember when he was gruff? Now he's doing this. Now he likes, you know, now he knows a Beyonce reference or whatever. Like, that seems to be how they use him now. And I feel like they got to...
I am way behind, but that process did start, like, midway through season two.
Yeah.
I would argue, so I agree.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't want to believe you're right, but you kind of are.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just the way these characters go. I mean, you know, you can't, I guess, keep them in one mode for the whole season, but I just feel like they go to that well too many times.
Eve, what do you think?
Well, I think that Dave has a little bit of confirmation bias because he was afraid that that's what was going to happen like a year and a half ago. So when you're afraid of something happening, so you've been worrying about this, and so you've been watching for it. That said, I'm not saying it's not, because, you know, it's something where my husband's like, oh, finally I can stand whole. And I'm like, you know why? Because they softened him up. So that doesn't mean that you're wrong, Dave, just because.
Well, while we're saying Dave the soothsayer, I did say on this program about a year and a half ago that Trump would be your next president of America. Well done. So there you go.
No,
okay, so maybe, maybe Dave makes this shit happen.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh God.
Trust me, Dave does not make anything.
Beetlejuice.
It's still a funny show. I just, you know, that's just. I mean, you know, yeah. It's just the way these things go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought there was funny stuff in this.
I want to get into these picks, guys.
All right, let's go around the horn. I will start. Favorite single crime per season series. I threw in some examples just to give you an idea of what I was talking about. So I'm gonna, since I'm first, I'm going to claim Top of the Lake, the Jane Campion show that ran on Sundance here.
Very nice.
This country, very moody, very not True Detective. Well, I guess True Detective was sort of moody too, but I thought it had excellent performances, particularly from Holly Hunter and Elizabeth Moss, who I was not crazy about even on Mad Men until the show came along, and then it really made me turn a corner on her. So Top of the Lake, it is streaming. You can find it. Eve.
I'm going to pick Whitechapel, the first two seasons specifically. It is set, I think, in the late 70s to early 80s. But what it is each season is a criminal who is sort of replicating a crime from the past. So it's, you know, obviously it's a little bit hokey because, like, how many people do you have in London that are like, hey, I'm going to be just like Jack the Ripper, which, of course, is what the first season was. But it was a lot of fun, and it also dealt with, there was a lot of sort of, you know, inner office politics, because the guy who was brought in to sort of run this unit of Scotland Yard did not deserve the role. And so he had to, like, earn the grudging respect of the sort of the blue collar men on the street with the, you know, it's just always so funny to me when they're like, well, he has a nice accent and he has a, you know, the British hillbilly accent. I'm like, you guys all sound really smart to me. But so there was a lot of that stuff the first season, and a little bit more the second season, which were these two guys who were basically replicating a lot of the things that The Craze did. You can find it, I think, on Amazon. It was on Netflix for a little bit, and it's one of those things that sort of comes and goes from Netflix, so you just sort of have to try to catch it. And it's available from very easily on a variety of other methods.
All righty. David T. Cole.
My choice is Brawn Braun.
Uh-huh.
The first season is spectacular.
It is good.
This is the original The Bridge, and it's been made a bunch of times at a bunch of different places. The American one was terrible, so don't go off that if you watched that and you didn't like it. It's a story of a police detective. She's sort of, like, I guess on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they'd ever come out and just say that she's autistic.
I don't think so.
They don't really have to, but no, I don't think they do.
And then sort of teddy bear looking guy of a partner. You know, one's Danish, one's Swedish, and they have to work together on this really weird murder that is happens, or the body is discovered exactly on the border of the two countries on this bridge. And it gets weirder and weirder from there. And it's very Scandinavian. It's very stylized. It's not quite, you know, it has elements of a British kind of Luther-esque show, but it's even crazier. And it's really also very beautiful in that very Scandinavian overcast all the time kind of way. My favorite crime show of all time, for sure.
Honorable mention to The Tunnel, which was actually my favorite of all of the versions of the story. That was the one that takes place between England and France. Sarah D. Bunting.
There were so many candidates that I just had to go with the one that I'm still recommending like 10 years after I saw the first series. So with honorable mentions to Broadchurch and American Crime Story, I am going to go with Epitaphios, starring the fantastic Julio Chavez. It was a serial killer drama. I think series one aired in 2004, 2005. Mm-hmm. It's Argentinian, but it was a HBO prestige series. It just like nobody ever heard of it. I watched the whole first season in a weekend, and some of the imagery has stuck with me. Julio Chavez is an amazing actor from the like Jolilade school, also kind of a teddy bear. It's fantastic. I'm not sure how one might put eyeballs to it, but I will.
I saw it on something.
I thought it was on HBO. Isn't it on HBO Go?
It's either on Hulu, Netflix, or HBO because I saw it this weekend. I was flipping by stuff.
All right.
Okay.
Definitely available.
So definitely recommend it. It's like at times it can really be, it does suffer a little bit from that. Like the serial killer is so much more baroque and organized and so much smarter than the cops that you're a little like, really? But sure. Maybe because it's a foreign language piece, you don't notice it as much. Like it's not as obvious because you're also reading subtitles. So you're a little distracted by that part of it, but it's very compelling and I definitely recommend it. And one of these days I'm going to get around to watching the second series. I can't wait.
All right. Moving on to our next category, best narrator. This was a Sarah D. Bunting suggestion. Fortunately, I get to go first and claim the very best one, Keith Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
Dateline, not strictly speaking a crime show, but I feel like he only narrates the crime stories and he is the best. Justly made fun of on SNL by Bill Hader in an excellent impression. Keith Morrison, Canada's own. Eve.
Well, I'm going with a fictional person, but I am so fond of Spencer for Hire, which I think should be remade. And if someone wants to hire me to showrun that show, I am there. But I thought that Robert Urich was such, you know, he was able to deliver what was a lot of times a very hokey writing in a charming and wry way. And I wish that Spencer for Hire were available for all of us to watch again right now. But the only way you're going to be able to watch it is if you find an old DVD. Because they're not even in print anymore.
Oh, sad. Dave,
I would like to defer to Sarah since this is her topic, and I suspect I might have picked the same one as she has.
Okay, well, first of all, I have a little mind-blowing factoid for the panel, which is this. Actually, maybe no one's going to care about this, but Dan Abrams, the host of the 60 Days In reunions and live PD. Mm-hmm. 60 Days In, so ably covered by our guest, Eve Beatty, on Previously.tv. Dan Abrams has a kid with Flo from Amazing Race 3. Flo Pacenti?
You were going to say Alice. No. Flo from Alice.
The IMDb did not make a note of that.
I was hoping that you were going to finish it. Flo B, the hair system that involves a vacuum cleaner.
Anyway, that just blew my mind. My actual pick is Peter Thomas. Of Forensic Files.
Ah, of course.
Thomas, who never sold out a single voiceover, no matter how bizarre or boring the crime, was a World War II vet who saw action at the battles of Normandy and the Bulge, and has won the Croix de Guerre and the Purple Heart, among others. One-time anchor for CBS News, Thomas's career began at age 14 with a local radio show. They couldn't technically pay him because he was too young, so they paid him in flying lessons. Thomas cited the Oscar won by a documentary he narrated as among his proudest achievements. It's called One Survivor Remembers. Thomas died earlier this year at the age of 91, and I regret that I never got to interview him and have that fantastic murder voice on tape. Dave, did you pick the same guy?
No, I didn't. You guys all thought you picked the right one, but you bozos don't know anything.
Oh, no!
It's Sheriff John Fennell.
He's right!
Oh my God, of course he is. This panel learned the hard way.
World's fastest police chase, world's deadliest this.
Oh man.
I was so world's shocked as each one of you collars. Did your choices and we didn't hear Sheriff John in any of that. That
He's
was amazing.
The best. Excellent choice.
He really
Dave.
Is. Phew. Just ask him.
All right, moving on. Best cop partners. once again, I feel like I have the ultimate answer, so I get happy to go first. Briscoe and Logan of Law and Order.
Yeah.
Eve.
I think that to answer this question, you have to think about who would you most want to investigate your murder. And for me, despite their many failings as human beings and significant addictions issues, I would want McNulty and Bunk from The Wire to investigate my murder, because those guys don't give up. They come back to stuff and they are obsessed.
Excellent. Dave.
I like Luther and Ripley from Luther. It's a very sort of mentor protege relationship, but it's also kind of like Luther, you know, isn't the most emotional guy, but he kind of lets his guard down around Ripley eventually. Yep. And then eventually other things happened and, and Luther's sad.
Cough. Yeah. Sarah.
Since Briscoe and Logan are taken, I will go with my number two, Broadchurch's Olivia Colman and David Tennant,
sure,
who were very bristly with each other, but in a fairly hilarious and realistic way.
Nice. All right. Favorite cop show trope, as mentioned in my intro up top, the rookie cop who can't handle it and maybe pukes. This was a running gag in Angie Tribeca in season one, which I loved. So that is mine. Eve.
I love it when the detective shows up last, even after like the cleanup guys in the corner, which you would get so bounced. And then they walk in and they say, "Hey, what do we got?" And everyone leaps to tell them the entire case and all the information already. Dave?
Oh, the uncooperative, busy witness being interviewed by detectives.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I gotta close the shop. I don't got time for this.
The Mulaney.
My mother's expecting, you know, cook sausages. I gotta go. We're done here. We're really, you're just gonna be, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Sarah.
I got trays to stack. Mine, of course, is the snarky pun before the credits.
Yeah.
The best practitioner of this, of course, one Leonard Briscoe.
I don't know.
Gil Grissom had a few. Yeah. He had a few good ones.
Looks like she ratted herself out. Is one of the best moments I've ever seen on television.
That was, I think, the season two finale of CSI, and I think in an alternate universe, we're still laughing at it. Like, I think we laughed all the way through the
credits.
All
right, just to remind everybody, it's the actress Susan Meisner. Yeah, from
our friend of the Americans.
She plays FBI guy's wife, divorced now.
On The Americans.
She's playing two roles in this one, but at the beginning, she's a dead body in a shopping cart, and they're doing their little CSI stuff, and a rat crawls out of her mouth during this thing, and he goes, "Looks like she just ratted herself out," and then it goes into the credits. Oh my God, it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Moving on. Best nonfiction crime show. I'm going to go with The Staircase. Ran on Sundance here, I believe. You can still get it on DVD, and they did an update a couple of years ago with new information about the crime. Once again, anyone named Peterson, stay away, because they're all murderers, apparently. Drew and Michael and the other guy, the one that Dean Cain played in the TV movie.
Scott.
Anyway, Scott, thank you. All Petersons are murderers. You heard it here first. Just kidding. Don't sue me.
I think in terms of results, this week I would like to tip my hat again to Making a Murderer. I mean, it's official.
Yes.
Brandon Dassey is going to be released under supervision while they figure out if they're going to retry him or what. And I think that never would have happened without that show. And so they deserve some recognition for that. But I am very fond of a show that ran for, I think, maybe 3 years on Investigation Discovery called The Shift. It's four maybe homicide detectives in Indianapolis who are working cases. It's a reality show, and crime in Indianapolis is interesting because the city is very racially divided. Hey, it's an allegory. The inside, it's completely gerrymandered, so neighborhoods are either completely black or completely white, and you'll be surprised to hear that most of the homicide cops are white, and so there are a lot of problems when you're going into certain neighborhoods in Indianapolis, and it's just a really gripping show overall, watching these hardworking Midwestern cops try to keep people from killing each other.
Sounds good. Dave?
You know, I'm not into true crime as much as other people on this panel, but I love The Jinx. That was fucking amazing. So
yep.
that's definitely my vote.
Especially since it so came out of nowhere for you. It's like not in your wheelhouse at all, but it was like such appointment TV for us.
Yeah. And the end with the mic, I think I was doing like a little like talking to myself comedy routine for about like 2 weeks after, like everything I would be doing.
It still happens now.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Complete with the belches.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Of course.
And the way that it just takes that turn, I don't know. I was just like just flabbergasted by the whole thing. I thought it was really well done. And you know, if like every true crime thing could solve the case in a spectacular, better than Hollywood fashion, I guess I would watch more true crime stuff. The Jinx.
Sarah.
I enjoyed all of these, but since they've already all been taken, I will go to the lighter side with the late, lamented only by me and Dan Brady, Campus PD.
No!
Which is just a bunch of drunken disorderlies at like on spring break in cities around our fine nation, and the extremely snarky cops who are just looking at the camera like, can you believe this fucking guy? Oh my gosh, it's so good. You can find little snippets of it on YouTube. I'll try to find one for the show notes, but oh man, I miss that. However, almost a substitute is that show they sometimes pair on Spike with cops called Jail. Which is literally just like the drunk tank and people being morons. And then the guards, again, looking at the camera like, what the fuck with this guy? So, yeah, I enjoy it when I love cops, but I also like it when law enforcement is sort of side-eyeing the camera like, eh-heh. So, right. I don't know. I like that.
Was the, when I say the homeless guy who was being arrested who really needed to pee, does everybody know what I'm talking about?
Of course.
Was that on one of these shows, or is that just a YouTube thing?
I think it was on one of these shows.
I think it was. Wasn't
I think it
Campus
was on
PD
Jail,
had
maybe
a couple episodes like
oh
that.
My God.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's the funniest fucking thing.
There's a lot of clips like that that only exist for me because they were on The Soup like 1 to 17 times.
Yeah,
that was one. The other one is the guy sure putting the pylon on his head and dancing around, who's also very drunk.
But watching the cops trying so hard not to laugh while all this is happening is just like one of those infectious comedy
totally
moments. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, best crime drama with respect to Law and Order, who I'm sure someone else is going to say. I'm going to say The Wire. So satisfying. For it really gives you the most drama for the time commitment that it takes to watch it. Still one of the best for good reason, The Wire. Eve.
If you talked to a cop, they would tell you that the best crime dramas out there are The Wire and The Shield, which think about that. Mm. Think about that, guys.
No thanks.
I know,
yeah,
right?
Seriously.
But
Pasola.
So yeah, but you know, for me, since I write about this stuff in my day job too, I want a little bit of escapism. So I'm going to say Luther, just because I feel like it has the right balance of grit and still the fantastic, impossible element, barring the fact that he oftentimes surpasses what I believe he should rightfully do to suspects. I think that Luther is the most satisfying of all those things for someone who wants to still have a fantasy element.
Fair enough. Dave.
Well, you have loose cannons and you have Luther's cannons. I also picked The Wire. You know, everybody bags on season two, but I want to say I thoroughly enjoyed season two.
Yeah, I like season two.
Yeah, I don't know why everybody, I guess it's just because
it's so different, but
people don't know what stevedores are and they got confused. They were looking for bulls or something, I don't know.
Well, I think that you're just like, wait, where are all the drug dealers that I love so much? Who the fuck are these guys?
Yeah. But I enjoyed it a lot. And I think we mentioned this, but I kind of enjoy the notion that Freeman sort of inhabited another furniture making role in Chance on Hulu.
We did.
So wherever he is, he's making furniture for somebody.
Sarah.
With respect to the Law and Order many franchises, which I think are the most consistently soothing and enjoyable, I'm going to say Happy Valley, because that was one that I definitely was like popping like M&Ms and could not stop watching them. And it was a crowd pleaser in the house. Often these procedurals, my husband's like, who cares? Or just wanders off to watch John Oliver and his headphones. But Happy Valley he was in. So, yeah, Happy Valley. Well
nice
done.
All right. Best crime comedy. I do love Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which we talked about earlier, and which Dave and I did a full rewatch of this summer. But I'm going to say Angie Tribeca, So silly. Great TBS show. Definitely the police squad for our time. Minute for minute, most jokes of possibly any show on TV. It's super duper dumb, but sometimes that's what you need. Eve.
I hate people who say that old TV is the best, and I don't believe that to be the case. But I still think that Barney Miller is mm-hmm. sort of the industry standard for, you know, that sort of cop ensemble comedy. And I, you know, I see so many echoes of it in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I think is a worthy successor. But still, Barney Miller is so good, and I do believe that it holds up.
On casting alone, you have to give it to Barney Miller. Yeah. Like, everyone in that yeah. cast is, like, a total gem. Dave.
Yeah. Plus the theme.
Yes, plus the theme.
Almost Human.
He's scanning balls in heaven now. We turned something off, and he was Michael Ealy was on Secrets and Lies, and I think Dave cried a little bit to see him not being Dorian. It's not right.
Oh, no. And then Jesse Vasquez not being Jesse Vasquez.
Right, same him episode. Too. Sarah.
Same, like, genre is Dave. Blind Justice. Just kidding. Original Police Squad.
Nice. All right. Finally, most underappreciated crime show. I thought we could send people off with something that they might want to discover for themselves. So basically, this is the crime show that no one you know has watched, but that you're always evangelizing about. My pick is State of Play. Mm. Was remade as a feature film with Ben Affleck a few years ago in America and Russell Crowe, which was not good. Actually, it was okay. But the show is so much better.
Yeah.
Excellent casting, features a very young James McAvoy as a con artist who's very funny. I feel like it got a little bit of buzz like around the time that it was out, and it doesn't seem like it's ever really part of the conversation of like gems you should discover.
To mention it's from the UK.
It is from the UK, yeah it's a British show. Yeah. But it's like it's a crime show plus a newspaper show. It's really got it all. State of Play. Eve.
It's not one of those things that no one's seen because Sarah wrote about this show for the site when it first came out, but I'm surprised that more people are not talking about Chance other than Dave mentioning it just a few moments before and destroying that part of, but I don't know if it's because the way Hulu drops shows that it is, in my opinion, very bingeable. It is, as Sarah pointed out, a terrific depiction of San Francisco. My husband, who's lived here since 79, says it's the best depiction of San Francisco he's ever seen. It's very Hitchcock cocky. They go places where I've been. That furniture store is a real place that my husband has been to many times in his former career as a mover. And it looks almost exactly like that, except without the forge. I don't know. I'm really enjoying it, and I just wish that they gave it to me all at once so I could watch it all at once. And,
yeah, Hulu.
I don't know why they don't do that. It's so dumb.
Yeah, it seems
they
like
screw themselves.
They do. Yep. They totally do. Because then you forget. Like, you know, who goes to Hulu and is like, what's new on my watch list? No one.
Like, it appears on your DVR like other shows you weren't thinking about.
Right.
So I think it's easy to have forgotten about Chance, you know, when we sort of all first talked about it, oh, it dropped. But figure out a way to remind yourself to watch it because I'm finding it to be very rewarding.
Yeah,
it comes out on Wednesdays.
Don't leave it up to...
I thought you were going to say it. You're going to use a synonym for it. All right, Dave.
Is Dave still on painkillers?
Yes.
Surprisingly, no.
Just curious.
Also from the UK, season one, only season one of the Bletchley Circle.
Yes.
Yes.
It is a story of a group of female code breakers who post-war come together to solve a serial killer.
I think so.
Yeah. In London. And they use all their skill sets they learned, at Bletchley Park.
Yep.
It is kind of really engaging and sweet. And it's got a little bit of that, you know, patriarchy kind of Mad Men storyline running through it too, but the actors are great and the case is interesting, and I kind of love how they weave all the code breaking stuff in. So
yep, excellent pick.
Season Sarah. 2, not so good.
No, not so good. Sarah finishes off.
Well, this is more about a crime family, but Animal Kingdom. I know that our esteemed colleague John Ramos has recommended it. We did a season in review on it. Our esteemed colleague Mark Blankenship really loved the show, but I feel like nobody I know, like in real life outside of the previously sphere, is talking about it. Ellen Barkin is amazing as this like basically female crime lord. The whole situation is really twisted. You get to see Scott Speedman's ass a couple times. What is not to like? It's really well done. It's really beautiful to look at. Sean Hitosi is really scary as the one son. I definitely recommend it. I'm sure it's on demand. And once it's Thanksgiving post-turkey time and you're looking for something to binge watch, I would recommend that.
All right. Lots of recommendations for you if you're looking for escapism this week for some reason.
And that's it.
That's it.
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is Tara Ariana.
I'll keep this brief just because we just essentially did around the dialing with the last segment. But wanted to mention, because I called out in a good way Jane the Virgin a couple weeks ago for having a very matter of fact abortion storyline. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend did it too. Even more casual about it, where Paula discovers that she's accidentally pregnant. She is about to go to law school, and now she's trying to decide if she should decline her acceptance and have this baby instead. And, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen. She gets a big boost in her career, her law career, and then over, like, basically practically the closing credits, it's like the end tag. The doorbell rings, she's in bed, and her son calls up, "Mom, I'll get it because you just had an abortion." Like, you can almost even hear him.
Wow.
It's so funny. It's like, it's brilliant. Amazing. It's amazing. And this show and Jane the Virgin, both female showrunners, they get the job done properly. And if you're looking for something else to, yes?
Oh, I was going to say also, didn't happen recently, but we watched the abortion episode of
BoJack Horseman.
BoJack Horseman, too.
Yes. Yeah. Not a female showrunner, but also very well handled, I thought. In the feminazi misandrist area of the dial, I'll also mention Sweet Vicious, which, as we record this, premieres tonight on MTV at 10 Eastern. It's about a pair of female college students who turn vigilante against campus rapists. Literally, what's not to like? I mean, it's a little bit, some of it is not as well made as you might hope on another network that has a longer track record with scripted drama, but it's scrappy, and I cannot fault the message, which I'm 100% on board with. So violence is wrong, but watch Sweet Vicious anyway. And for my plug, I'll just mention American Horror Story is wrapping its sixth season under its stupid shroud of mystery this week. So I would have you go to previously.tv and check out all my particles, and that's all I'll say, because I'm going to put it over to Eve, who's going to talk about it more now.
So, Eve, you're going to talk about more now.
I'm going to talk about more now. Tara, I've really been enjoying your particles, especially because it's also too dark for me to see the show a lot
of
times.
It's so dark.
So, here's the other thing, too. So, what I'm going to say is that I started watching this show just because I wanted to watch something scary, and I've been watching it on my phone at night, like with my phone propped up against my eyes with my glasses. I have really bad eyes, so it's like right here by my eyes so I can see it, so it's really, really dark. But it's been great because I've really been scaring myself, because I didn't realize when I started marathoning it, this is, I did it on the FX app, that I would have real reasons to be scared. So I don't know, it was a more innocent time when I started watching it, but I had quit the show, I thought, that last season, because the hotel season was too dumb and too rapey, and I just thought, well, I'm going to give this one shot. And I am really enjoying this season. I am completely caught up except for the finale. The whole premise is sort of what I wish. What do you remember when I said that I wished that Scream the show had been more like how Scream Queens was? Well, now yes. I wish Scream Queens was more like this show, because this show to me is what Scream and all those other things should have been like. It is meta in a way that is only occasionally irritating to me, like, oh no, bloggers. I think it's exactly the right way the show sort of should have gone at this point. And in terms of putting it within the, is it a reality show? Is it really happening? What's happening? We're going to kill everyone. So if you haven't been watching, especially if you've been put off because it's just been so rapey in the past, come on back. I notice a lot more women are writing episodes. Angela Bassett's directed at least two episodes. And other women are directing it too. And I feel like it's definitely up there with Coven for me in terms of my favorite seasons of the show.
I'm very interested to see how it comes out, I have to say, because I feel like it's been less like it's hung together better than previous seasons have, where it didn't seem like, it seemed like they had an idea of what it was going to be, and having it be 10 episodes versus 12 or 13, I think is smart and probably what they should do from now on. But I'm so wary about this season finale. So we'll see how we can compare notes after it airs, which is tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they could completely crap it up, in the last episode. But I've enjoyed myself throughout. I have felt scared at moments, which, you know, doesn't happen to me all that often with shows anymore. And I feel like people are turning in better, less cheeseball performances than they have in previous seasons too.
Yep.
Yeah. And so my plug is, once again, if you're seeking escapism, I don't know if there are many things better than Empire, which I think, along with the show Black-ish, is, if you're going to say that there's anything even remotely approaching a silver lining to the events in this country last week, it might be that it's going to make for some interesting commentary on shows like Empire and Black-ish. But I do The Particles of Empire, which is, this is not its strongest season, I will say generously.
Very but, gently put.
But now I'm sort of like, you know what? We need a show like this with powerful Black people doing things. And so I am glad that it exists. And I'm appreciative that I get to write about it. And I enjoy writing about it every week. So I urge you, whether or not you watch Empire, to come read what I'm writing. Because that way, if you just read what I wrote, it's like you know about it anyway.
Before we move on. Do you want to pitch anything for people in San Francisco?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I have a couple of day jobs. I actually, if you live in San Francisco and you're getting ready to shop for Christmas, I recently opened a brick and mortar store at 4120 Irving between 42nd and 43rd Avenues. It's hard to miss because it's the only business on that street. Good thinking of, huh? But we sell things made by local artists, craftsmen, some stuff that my husband and I screen print ourselves. It's a lot of fun. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Avenues Dry Goods. Just Google it. You'll find us. And if you're in San Francisco, come by the store. We're open 11 to 6 Saturday and Sunday, and we're working out our weekday hours as we speak.
Amazing.
Thank you, guys.
Sarah.
This is not Rectify's strongest season either so far, I am finding, which is unfortunate because it is its last season, and for some reason we are having this manic pixie dream Chloe inflicted upon us. I don't know who else is watching or how far along you are in the season, but I'm not, it's weird because this character is like this local artist near Daniel's halfway house where he lives, seems to be like there for the purpose of like creating a Socratic dialogue about his need for PTSD therapy, which, like, first of all, the show is usually much better at making these like awkward people don't really talk like this conversations seem realistic and sincere, partly because Daniel is written as this somewhat awkward person who has really not been around people for half his life. So that he would speak in abstractions makes a little more sense. That she's doing it is just annoying. And she's like that only on TV and in the movies free spirit versus like an actual genuine human being like all the other characters on the show. So it's rather jarring. I'm still enjoying the season. I want to trust the creators of the show, but Chloe is a problem. Chloe's hair is a problem. Chloe's unborn baby is a problem. Chloe's a problem. speaking of problems, in lieu of a plug, I would like to read an apology regarding The Apprentice. Dear listeners and readers, occasionally in my coverage of The Celebrity Apprentice, nearly 2 years ago, mind you, before the president-elect declared his candidacy, made his children and NBC collaborators in his vicious campaign, and revealed himself as not just a garish self-promoter, but a fomenter of genuine danger and division. I said complimentary things, on occasion, about our commander in Cheeto and his pancaked flunkies. Well, maybe not complimentary, but I believe I may have referred to Ivanka's ideas as, quote, not terrible on a couple of occasions, as well as wondering if Donald Jr. weren't starting to look like Cinnamon J. Scudworth from Clone High. Certainly, I should not have dragged this esteemed animated character into any locution involving this collection of traitorous Vichy government freaks. Many of us made the grave error of underestimating Trump Sr., considering him a harmless clown, because for decades he was exactly that, at least to tri-state area residents, a peripheral nightly news buffoon who had no relationship to our reality or any other. And while I may have excuses for chuckling at the Donald's outre comments and behavior from time to time, I also have many deep regrets. He is an attention tumor, and while I was but one capillary of his blood supply, not knowing any better and not meaning any harm, do not cut it, and never did. Yours very truly, from whatever black site I am about to be renditioned to for referring to one of his children as a real doll, Editor-in-Chief Sarah D. Bunting and Transmission.
Hello, lawsuit.
Oh, yes. Let us change the subject.
All right, everybody. It is time for the canon. Tara Ariano is submitting. Take it away, Tara.
I am. This might actually be the shortest length of time between an episode's airing and its submission to the canon. It's literally been less than a month. But ever since I watched it, I haven't been able to stop thinking about it. And even though I just mentioned it on Around the Dial like two extra hot greats ago, let's actually dig into it. It's season one, episode six of High Maintenance, which is titled X. As I probably said at the time, and not just because my dad listens, but because it's actually true, I've never smoked weed. So conventional wisdom would suggest that a series about a pot dealer, the guy, as he's called, played by Ben Sinclair, who created the show with his wife, Katja Blichfeld, would not be of interest to me. But High Maintenance isn't really about weed. It's a very carefully observed, surprisingly delicate series of character studies that all happen to have the guy and some weed in common. So for those who don't know, before it was a half-hour show on HBO, High Maintenance was a web series, each episode of which focused on a customer story for around 10 minutes. And with its new half-hour runtime, the HBO episodes tend to encompass a couple of stories each with some loose connection to each other. For example, both clients live in the same apartment building in Muzibat. Tick moves from a retired finance guy trying to connect with his adult daughter to the recycler who picks through their cans out front. The TV adaptation also brings back characters who were introduced in the web series and continues their stories as X does with Patrick, the protagonist in the first half. So let's get into it. Here is why I think X is so special. Number one, it is so specific. We open on Patrick, played by Michael Cyril Creighton, perhaps best known by three quarters of today's panel as the bitchy Brooklyn Without Limits clerk from 30 Rock, who turns out to be a Republican, as he takes delivery of an urn of cremains. We then cut around his apartment to his large collection of Helen Hunt fan art, his artistically arranged LaCroix empties, and the pile of handmade Afghans under which he tries to sleep. The door wreaths Patrick has made for every imaginable occasion reminds me of Dave's dad, who collected flags, both real ones, like the Saskatchewan provincial flag he would fly out front when I would come to visit, and festive ones for various holidays. So by the time the guy actually shows up, his familiarity with Patrick doesn't feel strained because we feel we know Patrick after less than 4 minutes. But apparently it's been a while since the guy was there, as we hear in clip one.
How are you, man? Oh, I'm sorry. Is that...
No, she's not with us anymore. So.
I'm so sorry, man.
It's fine. It was a long time coming, and it's been like 6 months, so I'm getting used to it. So.
Good.
Are you thirsty? Do you want water?
Yeah, that'd be great. Someone tells me you're gonna offer me a LaCroix.
Yep. Do you mind drinking a coconut one, though, because I need white?
No, does it taste good?
Yeah.
When the guy at Patrick's request stays to smoke a little, Patrick gets super high off one hit, which is weird given how much he's apparently bought from the guy over the years, as we hear in clip two.
Sorry, man. It's pretty rough. You know, I usually have vape pens, but I ran out.
That's okay. We didn't really smoke it anyway because like I would bake with it because my mom's lungs were bad.
Baked with only an eighth at a time?
No, I baked a dozen.
Instead of delving into the...
Cool.
Sorry. I stepped on the guy's line. I'm so bad. Instead of delving into the holes in Patrick's story, come on, man, even I know you need more than an eighth of an ounce to bake with, the guy changes the subject in clip number three.
Just ask you a question.
Yeah?
How
how long have we been sitting here?
Like, not very long.
I feel like a little bit like I'm in a movie.
Oh, yeah, man. That's like the best part. Sometimes you just put on headphones and you're walking around the city. It's like you're in a movie. It's awesome.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it is fun. You should do it sometime.
I bet it's fun if you, like, listen to a real movie soundtrack and then it's like you're in that movie or your own movie or whatever.
Yeah. I want to go, man.
No. Okay.
It's really nice outside, so you should have your movie moment today.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not even going to put on my jacket.
Don't put on your jacket. Take off your shirt.
So even if you didn't watch Helen, which is the web series episode that introduced Patrick and his then living mother, which, by the way, all of these, the web series episodes are on HBO Go as well. The episode quietly sketches in so much detail about Patrick that we get what a big deal it is that a couple of hits a pot and an inspiring speech from the guy actually do motivate Patrick to go outside, which leads me to point number two. It's a New York story. Patrick takes to the streets with his headphones and joins the throng of people and seems pretty okay about it even when some crazy stranger yells in his face, particularly when he wanders into some random bodega and finds case upon case of the elusive passion fruit LaCroix. New York is great! He's wheeling it home in a classic grocery cart when he trips and really scrapes up his hands and his head. New York is terrible! Pam, a woman on the street, up the street, sees it happen and helps him back to her storefront. She's a psychic and jokes of his fall. I saw that coming, to clean him up. And they have this exchange in clip number four.
I hope you don't mind. I had to put your cart out on the curb. It's busted.
I'm pretty embarrassed that you saw me do that.
Those old lady carts are treacherous. You're lucky you made it out alive. Let's see that forehead. I hope you don't mind me saying so, Patrick, but your scalp's pretty dry. You should try some argan oil. Did I hurt you?
No, I just...
Oh.
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay, hon. I'd offer to give you a palm reading, but your hands are pretty jacked. Give me your leg.
Is that toss away what doesn't spark joy book?
Ooh, yes. You should take it.
No, I can't take your book.
No, I insist. Marie would want it that way.
Oh, New York is great. Also great that singer/performance artist Justin Vivian Bond of Kiki and Herb as Pam in an understated performance pitched to the show's mellow tone. So Patrick takes the book and goes full Con Mari on his apartment, finally picking up a carved wooden box. How much joy does it spark? We find out when the guy returns in clip number five.
You don't have to do that today. I'm not buying. So I've been simplifying some things in my life.
Yeah, that's great, man.
Thank you. And I think that means that I'm not going to buy weed from you anymore. Or anyone anymore.
Okay. I mean, you didn't need to bring me here to tell me that, but I understand, I think.
No, I have something for you, so.
If you turn around with a gun and shoot me, I want to freak out, man.
No.
The box with a ribbon around it.
Oh my god.
It's full of all the weed he's bought.
You know that, right?
I know. I just thought maybe you could use it.
Well, some of this weed is pretty fucking old.
Mm-hmm. Some of it.
So a chance encounter with a stranger under painful and humiliating circumstances ends up being the catalyst for Patrick to evaluate his life, make positive changes, and be honest with someone who probably has no idea how important he's been to Patrick. New York is great. Number three, it gives the guy a story. What I loved about the guy this whole season is how serene he is. We see him interacting with some real loonies among his clientele, including nude ones in this episode in a short segment that comes up after Patrick gives him back all the product that he had bought over the years. And he always meets them with the same soothing calm and lack of judgment. Here's how he wraps things up with Patrick in clip number six.
Thanks, man.
No problem.
I wish I had your Tupperwares. I would have brought them back if I knew you were going to break up with me today.
I don't need them.
Well, that's good, because I lost most of the lids to them already.
Sidebar, where do the lids go? Why does that happen? It's not like they get washed separately. Anyway, that's a side.
The land of wind and ghosts and dryer socks.
It's true. Mm. Anyway, the guy perfectly accepts this somewhat formal gesture in the spirit in which it's intended, but also relieves the heaviness of the moment in a way that doesn't feel flippant or disrespectful. And Patrick is left with his dignity and the chance to frame things however he likes, as we hear in clip number 7.
Who was that?
Oh, just an ex.
And that sound you hear, by the way, is the can collector from Tick hitting the LaCroix mother load, which I also love. but if we spent the season thinking the guy is just drifting through life untouched and untroubled, X corrects that notion by giving him a big setup. He takes a call from someone he doesn't know, and it turns out to be an ambush, which gets robbed at possible gunpoint. And out a set of keys, he goes looking for the spare set he thinks his neighbor Gwen, played by Rebecca Naomi Jones, may have, since we've just watched her having the solo night in to end all solo nights in. I'm talking hot bath, wine, Korean face mask, tarot reading, the works. We know, as the guy may not, that she's in no mood for company. Don't get me wrong, she's not a monster. She's very solicitous when he tells her that he was robbed, but we also determine that her partner, Julie, who is out of town, is the one the guy is actually friends with. And once Gwen determines that he's okay, she starts giving him pretty strong signals that she'd like him to leave in clip 8.
Did you try Obed?
You know, Obed's really shitty about getting back to us.
You know, if you keep trying him, he eventually...
Can I just stay here in the guest bedroom if he doesn't, though?
Yeah, if we can't find these keys and you can't get back into your apartment...
This is mine.
It's a record.
Okay.
Yeah, this is definitely mine.
Great.
So with his customers, the guy has a therapist's ear for their problems and knows exactly when to make a graceful exit. But now he's the one with the problem. And since Gwen can't find the keys because Julie also read Marie Kondo's book and has tidied it up a bit too aggressively, there's no transaction for them to share that would rack things up, which is why it's really unfortunate when Gwen texts a friend, "Should have gone to see the robot woman. My neighbor is talking my fucking ear off. Kill me now. Scream emoji." Except she accidentally picks the wrong conversation in her text history and sends it to the guy himself, and that leads to clip 9.
I'm just gonna go to the bar where Beth works.
Oh, you don't have to do that.
It's fine. I'll just wait till she gets off work, and then maybe I can go home with her.
An Australian girl?
Yeah.
That's nice. He likes her.
Yeah. She's
okay.
Great.
Yeah. Well, good. I'll keep looking for your keys.
Thanks. You want this?
No, I'm good. I'm still good.
Sorry if I put you out at all.
No, of course not.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
See ya. I'll let myself in.
Okay. Get that tram. Uh-huh.
She looks at her phone. So that last sound at the end of the clip was the chair scraping as she realizes what she did and races after the guy. So leads to my final point, which is, and I don't know how else to put this, I love the show's humanity. And Gwen and the guy have this exchange in clip 10, our last clip.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
No,
it's okay.
It's really not okay. Just listen, I've had a crazy fucking week, and I was just looking forward to having the night. I love her, but she takes up a lot
Dude,
of space.
I get it. I was married to her.
But I'm really sorry. This is not
Gwen,
okay.
Take it easy. Take a pause. Make a buffalo smile. It's totally fine, really.
Okay.
I appreciate you letting me lick my wounds in your space.
You're welcome.
Very welcome. I love you, man. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
I love you too, dude.
So I wrote this about the Better Things finale last week on Previously.tv, but I just love the shows this season that are new this fall and portray people acting like people. So a misdirected text gaffe on a lesser show would be the inciting event for a big dumb fight. A lesser show would have hung a lantern on the reveal that Gwen is now living with the guy's ex-wife, but here it just makes sense in retrospect of why he took off his wedding band before he knocked on Gwen's door. And the situation is basically that Gwen and the guy are friends-in-law, and while no one likes to find out what people say about us behind our backs, it's exactly as big a deal as the guy makes of it, which is none. And after indulging himself with what seemed like about a half hour of self-involvement and oblivious imposition on Gwen's night, he's back to being himself, Buffalo smiling down the hall, where he tests his door and finds out he hadn't even locked it when he left because, yes, he lives one door down from his ex-wife and her new lady. That's how chill he is. So you can't quite say that High Maintenance's strength is its world building. Its world is New York, which was already built. But Blichfeld and Sinclair are so insightful in the ways that they've interconnected the people in their story. Yes, they all know the guy because he sells them weed, but these stories could just as easily spin out from all the individuals sharing the same L train car to work every morning, or getting their chopped salads from the same deli, or dropping their laundry at the same Fluff and Fold, etc. All kinds of people meet all other kinds of people in New York, which is why some people's talk of bubbles and New York values is so absurd. Even Patrick productively interacts with a variety of other citizens, and he's agoraphobic. Did I already say New York is great? It is the best. Other large American cities are fine. Don't at me. Other episodes this season might have hinged on how people forced into each other's proximity can be cruel to each other, like Selfie. The season's penultimate episode, but this episode proves not just that there is such a thing as the kindness of strangers, thank you, Pam, but that sometimes strangers can be kinder than friends, and also that when a friend fucks up with her wine tipsy texting thumbs, it's not the end of the world. Anyway, shitty shows make sure to underline the lessons you're supposed to be learning by having one of their characters narrate your feelings for you. And no, I don't mean Jane the Virgin. That narrator is honestly the only one television needs, but High Maintenance just infuses all its stories with humanity and does it in a totally low-key way. And I love that for it, and I hope you did too. End of presentation. Who wants to go first?
Let's let our guest Eve go first.
All right.
Well, like you guys, I'm not a big drug guy. I think the last time I did anything is I accidentally ate a hash brownie during Dyke March 2005. And so that was weird.
Bite a nickel.
I know, right? I ended up watching the Knight Rider movie in Espanol.
Oh my god!
And thinking I understood it, it was great. Oh. But so I have to admit that I have been sort of like, people have said to me, you know, oh, High Maintenance, you're really gonna like it, and I'm like, I have to hear about pot all the time, you know, San Francisco, California, I don't care. And so I'm so grateful that you presented this episode, so I was forced to actually watch it and admit that it is a really good show, and it's not really about pot. Why don't they say that? I'm also glad that you chose this show, because I feel like we've been talking about Marie Kondo for like a year now.
Yeah,
you and I, Tara, going back and forth on it, and it's nice to see Marie Kondo having a positive impact in someone's life. But I was really impressed by how subtle everything was. That's so unusual for an HBO show. And how no one was beautiful, really. I mean, whatever. Like, you know, humanity's beautiful, but no one was beautiful. Nothing was slick. I don't know. This is a really good show, you guys.
I think so, too.
That's all I got.
Okay. Who's next?
I'll go.
Okay.
Unless I'm supposed to go last because nope. Tara was eagerly awaiting.
No, go ahead.
My verdict. I adored this. It was like a documentary, I thought, as a retired former high functioning agoraphobic and probably future agoraphobic, let's face it. Scary out there, people. And a longtime New York City resident. It just like, they managed to shoot in real looking apartments, first of all. That always helps. Like, you know, as much as I love certain other New York shows, it's like nobody lives in a space that big. I totally agree with Eve that everyone looked like real people that you actually know. And the interesting thing is that the guy, there actually aren't all that many people necessarily in the average New York City social circle that are like that guy, but everybody knows that guy, and my version of that guy is actually named Patrick, so that's sort of weird. But just this very, like, accepting, curious, mellow soul that has, as Tara said, a good ear for, like, you know, what's going on and doesn't get too upset or freaked out by people just being human beings, which when you're all living on top of each other, as we are, especially at fraught times like these, I don't know. It was really nice to watch that and to just see that thing that New Yorkers already know about New York, which is that we are friendly and we'll look out for each other and you, if you're not from around here. So that interaction with Pam and Patrick was really great and reminded me of the best of this fine city. But yeah, it was really, like, it just felt really real in all the best ways, and occasionally was funny and occasionally was touching. And that was definitely a show that Tara had wanted me to watch and thought I would like. And I just was not, like, getting around to it because of all the other garbage that I have to do slash is going on. And I just, like, here's the high compliment. I was knitting while watching this, and eventually, like, I just stopped sort of mid-row and sat like that for about 10 minutes. So yeah, it was a really great half an hour, and I'm really glad that I got to watch it. And I'm going to go back and dig into the rest of the season. I hope it won't be, like, weird to have come in at the end and then go back. But
no, I mean, they're not really, fine. They're not sequential.
Right.
No weirder than the bong cozy you were knitting, apparently.
Actually, it would make an excellent bong cozy color wise. A lot of greens and browns in this rectangle. Uh-huh. Dave.
Well, everybody knows me as the big reefer fiend. So I got a lot of things to say about
marijuana with an H. Sure.
Okay. So, first of all, let's talk about LaCroix. Or as I like to call it, coin water.
Yep.
It tastes like somebody just dropped their spare change into a, you know, a Perrier or something like that, left it in the fridge for, I don't know, 3 to 4 months, and then crack it open and drink it.
That was not the point of this presentation, but it is terrible. All you people who are, like, super into LaCroix, examine your lives.
Agreed.
Drink a fucking Fresca. Live a little.
I don't know. The blueberry cucumber was pretty good.
You know that having opened this door, all the comments on the thread are just going to be about LaCroix now? Like raisins? Yeah, raisins.
Raisin for the LaCroix. Record, I am team Polar Seltzer now and forever, but I don't mind.
Raisin-flavored LaCroix, the worst of all worlds.
Oh, now it's
let
ruined.
Me tell you why nobody's watching this show. It's because of the pun title.
Yeah.
This show needs a different title.
Yeah.
You know, it's the cats and dogs of HBO. You really just got to take a step back. You know, everybody loves a pun. Don't get me wrong. I love puns. I truck pun into puns. My Twitter feed is basically just a pun delivery system. But rarer is the TV show that has a pun title that it's actually a good show that lasts. So that's unfortunate. I think that actually would keep people away, you know,
maybe.
That would otherwise watch this for the human drama and not the fact that it might be something you would read about in High Times, which it kind of feels like.
Yeah, I don't
like
think it's the pun.
Title.
I think, like, the fact that it might be that people might think, like, oh, well, this is going to be stoner humor,
yeah.
Which
yeah,
I have not. No time
right.
for, which is what I thought, frankly.
Me too.
It was like,
me too.
The only reason I ever smoked pot in college was so that I could put up with everybody else who was smoking pot.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go there. But yeah, maybe some better branding. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. But the show itself is very good. I really enjoyed the oh my god, what's the guy's name?
Patrick.
Yeah, the first half, anyways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More than the second half. I thought they were both strong, but I really wanted, like, I wouldn't have minded if the whole thing was about Patrick. Especially after you watch the short from the web series where his mom's still around and what he's doing and all
and
his insecurities and, you know, they're living in this tiny railroad apartment.
It's the same apartment. Like it's the same exact location as you see in the,
yeah.
in the HBO episode. They went to back to the same one.
Yeah. And it's, you know, they're sort of right on the line of him being believable and sort of TV believable. Like, you know, he only drinks LaCroix. He's got a hunt to, you know, art fetish thing going there, you know, and all this, you know, weird idiosyncrasies that seem a little larger than life, but in the context of his story, they kind of just like feel like just, you know, part of the recipe. It doesn't feel too outlandish. So I thought that was well done. You know, I thought the balance there felt right. And when he goes out and has his little, you know, self-soundtracked stroll in New York, I'm like, oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. that was always the best thing about New York, is that the only way to experience it is on your feet, really. You know, I thought they captured that really well. The second half, I thought was, I think we've all been there or have been that person, either waiting for somebody to leave or being that person who's not leaving for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I know I've been on both sides of that equation, not realizing, you know, one of them at the time, but looking back, I'm like, oh, boy. it's a nice show. It's actually a nice show to come down from all the other HBO stuff where it's, you know, who's the true identity of X? Is this person a robot? You know, it's like, you know, it's kind of a nice change of pace for HBO, and it's a nice little show.
Yeah, it aired at Fridays at 11, which is like, it's a very Fridays at 11 kind of show, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So shall we put this to a vote? Eve, what say you?
Yeah, I say yes.
And
Sarah, I'm eager to watch the rest of it.
Sarah D. Bunting?
I also say yes.
And I will say yes as well. All right. High Maintenance, Season 1, Episode 6, X. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara, with our winner.
Our winner this week is Rosie O'Donnell, because living well is the best revenge after you've been insulted in the first presidential election of a year. She's coming back with a role in a Showtime show called Smilf, which I believe is Single Mother I'd Like to Fuck. No word on when that's actually premiering, but that's a new sitcom, and good job, Rosie. Stick it.
And Loser of the Week?
That would be Law & Order SVU. They've actually had a solid season so far under the new regime. But speaking of regimes, due to a certain regime change in Washington, D.C., that Trump episode that they banked and were advertising starring Lumberg from Office Space, mm-hmm. probably never going to air because NBC is a bunch of collaborating whores. Just kidding. Don't sue me.
Speaking about collaborating whores, you know what time it is?
Whore time?
Yeah, game time.
Almost as good.
All right, everybody, this is the 10th, holy cow, the 10th game time of the season. To remind you of our standings, here they are. Sarah, 4 points.
Woo!
Could win the whole season with a victory today. Tara, right behind with 3 points. And Value Guest, right behind her with 2 points. Today, we are playing Plot Keyword Haiku from Brendan Brezzo, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. It's pretty simple. I'm going to read you a haiku of his creation that is composed primarily out of IMDb keywords for that show. You tell me what show we're talking about.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Yep.
Yes.
So there's no hints. It's just you know it or you don't.
Got it.
Are we ready to play Plot Keyword Haiku?
Before we do, can you remind us about the steel meal? Because that's something the valued guest now has.
Oh, right. So the steel meal is if you know the answer to a question and the and somebody else is answering and they answer wrong, you can announce you want to use your steel meal, in which case you have a chance to answer that question and get that point.
Eve. That is you.
But there's only one per game. One. It's like a Tim Gunn save. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's see who's going to go first.
We will start with Tara.
All right. So we're going to go Tara, Sarah, Eva. All right.
Okay.
All right. Are we ready to play Plot Keyword Haiku?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Tara. A dismemberment of New Jersey mob garbage full of heroin.
New Jersey mob. I assume it's the Sopranos? Okay.
Yes, keywords were dismemberment New Jersey mob garbage heroine.
Okay.
All right. To Sarah, with deductive genius, a mysterious villain stalks a detective.
A mysterious villain stalks a detective?
Yes.
What? Sherlock?
Hey. Oh.
Woo.
Eve, through narcissism lens, balding man views reference to Superman joke.
Smallville?
Oh. That's what I thought too.
That's Seinfeld.
What?
Sure.
All right, back.
Makes sense.
Back to Tara.
Yep.
In basement office, shabby UFO poster, wanted to believe.
The X-Files.
Nurses and doctors think suicide is painless, all while in drag.
Jesus.
MASH.
Eve, fish out of water, racing to escape death row with blood, with brotherly love.
A Prison Break.
Back to Tara.
Done. Yes.
Weapons aplenty with katana and crossbow, spray blood and gore.
Daredevil?
I'd like to steal a meal.
All right.
Oh!
The Walking Dead.
That is correct.
Ooh, nice.
All right, well, so Steel Bill is now gone. Okay, nice play.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Yep.
Back to Tara. No.
Nope, Sarah.
Sarah, sorry. Teenage girl romance, kissing in the boiler room, entirely dressed entirely plaid.
You have me at boiler room. That's my so-called life.
Nice.
Thanks, Picky.
All right, so now we're back to Eve.
Eve, yep.
Resigned, got kidnapped, now drugged and mind controlled. Oh no, a balloon. Resigned, got kidnapped, now drugged and mind controlled. Oh no, a balloon.
Homeland?
That's what I would have guessed.
Is it the prisoner?
It is the prisoner.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay, back to Tara.
Yep.
In a mining town, male full frontal nudity doesn't bother outlaws. Full frontal nudity doesn't bother outlaws.
Deadwood. Okay, good.
Full male full frontal nudity is a keyword.
Call that
for. Yeah, it's probably like one of the gross guys.
Yeah,
you know, it's not right. Who you want, right?
No, mm-hmm. never
is
who you want.
also see Westworld.
Yeah.
Wood.
Sorry. So
Sarah.
Back to Sarah.
Yep.
Tied to a table, knife splatters blood everywhere. Dead father looks on.
Dexter?
Who wrote this game?
Brendan Brazo.
Brendan, you are amazing.
Yeah. He's done a few. Yeah. They're always really good. Back to Eve. With his Hamburg hat, treasurer of Seaside Beach tames the alcohol.
Of Seaside Beach tames the alcohol. Benson?
Anybody?
Boardwalk Empire.
Boardwalk Empire.
Oh shit.
Back to Tara.
Yes.
Misanthropic jerk arguing to deduction, limping all alone.
House.
Harvard law student, photographic memories of sharp-dressed lawyers.
Photographic memories of sharp-dressed lawyers?
Yes.
Century City?
I thought you were going to say it there for a second. It's Suits.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. All right. This is bringing us into our first score break. Eve. Anarchist hacking at accidental incest through introvert mask.
Yep.
Mr. Robot.
You nailed it.
Wow.
Okay. Very close game. Eve has 3 points. Sarah and I are each tied with 4.
All right. Great. Back to it. Yep. Cara Ariano.
Mm-hmm.
Murdered paperboy in seaside coastal beach town is a whodunit.
Broadchurch?
Number 17.
It's pretty cool.
Akin to Hamlet. Arms trafficking gang arms trafficking gang leader questions his club's path.
Should read that again.
Yeah, let me read that again for you. Akin to Hamlet, arms trafficking gang leader questions his club's path.
Sons of Anarchy.
You ding, are ding. Correct. Gay parents partake in mockumentary of blended family.
Transparent? No. Shit. As soon as I said it, I knew it was Modern Family.
Yeah,
God damn it.
It was.
I know. Too late.
Yeah. All right. Tatara.
Yep.
Between the hours of terroristic mole threatens a blackmail standoff.
Can you read that again, please?
Between the hours of terroristic mole threatens a blackmail standoff.
24.
Correct. Sarah. Spoof of Johnny Quest ventured into a failure of super science.
Spoof of Johnny Quest
ventured into a failure of super science.
I don't know. Venture Brothers?
Yep.
Oh!
Thank you, keyword ventured.
Yes.
I'll say.
Okay, to Eve, with flashlight and gun, occult detective brothers banter werewolves.
Supernatural.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yep.
A janitor taunts hospital bromance roommates during monologue.
Scrubs.
That's really, really good. Yep. A mutant orphan captains crew of idiots all hate Lobster Man. Captain's crew of idiots all hate Lobster Man.
All hate Lobster Man.
Oh.
Frisky Dingo?
Oh, so close. Futurama.
Futurama.
Lobster Man is Zoidberg.
Oh, right.
I love that Zoidberg. Lobster Man is the keyword. In Snow of Winter, incest begets civil war with a bastard son.
First, why do I get all the incest ones? Game of Thrones?
Keywords for you.
Sorry,
getting all the incest questions. Actually, there's a lot. That was like the fourth, fifth one.
That tells you a lot about their user base. That's something that people are searching on, just saying.
You're not wrong.
I know I'm not.
Heavy drinking men advertising gay blackmail with unfaithfulness.
Mad Men.
Sarah, tableau of gore, full of brutal violence, hides a psychopath.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Tableau of gore.
Yep. Hannibal.
Action heroines have a mysterious past cutting human tails.
Is tails with a T-A-I-L-S or
like an
L-E-S.
Animal tail swishing around on the backside.
Okay, then Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
No. Anybody?
No.
Yeah, the human tails probably threw you, but that was a plot point in Orphan Black.
Oh, right.
Oh,
right.
Right.
Back to Tara.
Yep.
In soaked clothes near beach, number station French woman flashes back her fate.
Please read that again.
In soaked clothes near beach, number station French woman flashes back her fate.
Oh, soaked clothes. Lost.
Yes, soaked. To Sarah. The man with no name, each dying repeatedly, was last of his kind.
The man with no name, each dying repeatedly. Oh, Jesus. I have no idea. X-Files?
Anybody?
No.
Doctor Who.
Oh, Christ.
All right, bring us into our second score break for Eve. Man, child, whoremonger plus domineering mother equals one spy spoof.
Yep.
What was the last line?
Equals one spy spoof.
Archer?
Archer is correct.
Nice.
All right, that was question 30 of 45.
Still very close. Eve has 6, Sarah has 7, I have 9.
All right, so we're back to it with Tara.
Mm-hmm.
All the Norse gods love female frontal nudity with raiding battles.
Vikings?
In a coffee house, wisecrack comedy monkey has divorced friends.
Is it friends?
Yeah.
Thanks, Marcel.
This social satire with self-referential couch is absurdism.
Self-referential couch is absurd. Well, we already had friends. Pickle and Peanut?
Couch. Famous show with Simpsons? The couch. The Simpsons.
Sarah got it.
Yeah. Okay, to Tara.
Yep.
Family business, black comedy, dark secret, embalming male pride.
6 feet under.
6 feet under is correct. Sarah. Pranking everyone with big pretzels once a year down on the beet farm.
Beet.
Pranking everyone
with big pretzels once a year down on the beet farm.
B-E-E-T, I assume.
Yeah, two E's, okay. Like the vegetable. Okay. In fact, it is the vegetable.
Down on the beet farm?
Yes.
Giant pretzels.
Correct. Big pretzels. Big pretzels.
Big, very big pretzels. Big enough to forestall the no buzzer?
Probably not.
I don't know. Benson.
No, that is The Office. Oh. To Eve, dialogue-driven ensemble cast reflection in Oval Office.
The West Wing.
Tara.
Mm-hmm.
A human robot committing uxoricide, questing through space. Uxoricide.
Uxoricide.
E-E. Exoricide.
Uxoricide?
Uxoricide, yeah.
A human robot?
Yeah, committing uxoricide. Questing through space.
Got to be Astro Boy.
Astro Boy?
Yes. No, I don't know what it is. Okay. that's my joke.
That was
guess.
Very authoritative.
Right. I don't think there's any uxoricide in Astro Boy.
Do you know what that is?
No, but whatever it is, I assume it's not involved.
Uxor is the Latin word for wife, so it's killing your wife.
Yeah, it is. Well done. Okay, so knowing that, do you have a guess?
Sarah's so smart. No, I don't.
Battlestar Galactica.
Sure.
All right. Wise cracking humor with police brutality and male nudity.
I was like, oh, Law and Order. Wise cracking
humor
with police brutality. Oh, NYPD Blue?
Oh, that is a good guess.
Yeah.
But it is not what the keywords matched. We're talking The Shield.
Oh, that was my first guess. I changed it. It's a fucking Dennis Franz's ass.
Ruins everything. Eve, a man there with does. Glasses. Misfortune, misadventure, misunderstandings.
Gross.
I love that guess.
Yeah. But the show was actually Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's pretty good.
Oh.
Earl Grey Captain with fully functional android explore holodecks.
Really? What was the first word?
Earl Grey Captain.
Oh,
with fully
Star Trek The Next Generation.
Sarah, a drunken father in City of Love has gay interracial sex. A drunken father in City of Love has gay interracial sex.
A drunken father.
Keep in mind, this is haiku comprised of keywords. Not necessarily describing, you know, an actual.
It's plot. Always sunny in Philadelphia.
The keywords: drunken father, city of love, gay, and also interracial sex. That is Shameless.
Oh, right.
Shameless. All right. So it is to Eve. Double act singers deadpan argue with satire while it's business time.
Double act singers?
Double act singers deadpan argue with satire while it's business time.
Oh, Flight of the Conchords.
Nice.
You are correct. All right, everybody's got one question left, so let's get the scores quickly.
Okay, Sarah and Eve are tied with 8 each. I have 12.
Okay. Each of these is worth 20 points. No, just kidding. Breaking the fourth wall, this mock documentary has feminism strength. Breaking the fourth wall, this mock documentary has feminism strength.
I do not know.
Parks and Recreation.
Oh,
yeah.
Of course.
Oh.
Yep.
All right, Sarah, your last question. Mafia sleeve gun partners with dumb criminal for family feud.
Remember, Sopranos has already been guessed.
Yeah.
Yes. Mafia sleeve gun
partners with dumb criminal for family feud.
Justified.
Hey.
Oh!
And Eve, here is your last question. Pot smoking actor cherish friendship between men in film industry. Pot smoking actor cherish friendship between men in film industry.
That's what I would have guessed.
Yeah, that is Entourage.
Oh, that's so much better. That totally makes sense, yeah.
All right, so Tara won that, but we do have one shits and giggles question. And just to make things interesting for next week, I'm putting up a steel meal.
Ooh.
Plus 2 Dave points.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
All right, so I need to read the whole thing.
Yep.
And then people can start guessing. All right?
Yep.
Yep.
The old men heckle with Variety guest star vaudeville backstage show.
Muppet Show.
Sarah!
You are correct. Well done.
Tara! Tara. Good job, Tara. Good game.
Yeah, that was super
fun.
That
was fun, eh?
Yeah.
Good job, Brendan.
All right, everybody. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We discussed The Killing Season and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, plus our current and past crime TV picks before we went around the dial with stops at Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, American Horror Story, and Rectify. Tara successfully pitched High Maintenance for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Haiku Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano, Sarah D. Bunting.
Sounds like my first ex-wife.
And Eve Beatty.
I hate moving. Well, but if Trump wins, we're all moving.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Fuck, I'm going to have to move if every time they're going to fucking make improvements, it's going to cost like an extra $100 a month. I don't want to fucking move. I hate moving. We're all moving if Trump wins. But I don't want to move. Now. Fuck.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.